Welcome to episode 316 of Coffee Pods and Wads. Did you know that the way that you're reaching your clients as a coach or the way that your coach is reaching you as a client isn't as good as it can be unless obviously you're already using Fitter, then, you know, good job you. Fitter has launched monthly unlimited, meaning that you can have white labeling and Zapier, which integrates Gmail, MailChimp, Facebook, heaps of other apps as well, all in one. You can go to get.fitter.training to give it a go for a week and ultimately realize the error of your ways and change for good. Built for athletes, bags are legitimately incredible. Heaps of pockets without the bulk. I use mine in America and never struggled for space once. They also have luggage that are equally high quality. Builtforathletes.com. And you can use CPW15 for savings. Whoop. It's a little strap, goes around your wrist. It's got loads of science inside it that I don't understand, but the app on my phone does, and then that helps me to understand it. Measure your heart rate across the day and the night and see how you're recovering. Act and learn to recover better and gain those little 1% every day. Join.whoop.com/CPW for savings. I can get a free strap there as well. Go Wad. I've just finished another season as a huge supporter of the CrossFit season and its community, and it's propelled me to try to improve my use of the app because I've been, well, maybe predictably, but I've been pretty shit at it. You can join me in self-betterment by downloading the app and starting your free trial today. The news with LSKD. LSKD have launched their varsity jackets by raffle. There's only 150 made. You can go to lskd.co to join the raffle for a chance to buy. Wadapalooza, one of the biggest and best and most community-centered events on the CrossFit calendar, is launching its online qualifiers for January 2024. Individual qualifiers over 2 weeks, September 14th to the 18th, and then the 21st to 25th. Teams of three will be October 12th to 23rd. Registration for both individual and teams is open now. Tier and Wadapalooza are going big. They're adding divisions, they're listening to feedback and improving on what was already a pretty hugely impressive offering this year in January. Wadapalooza.com for more or at Wadapalooza on Instagram. Some self-serving news now. The newly launched Coffee Vlogs and Wads is on YouTube. 7 videos across the week in the States for the CrossFit Games. I'd love you to watch. Let me know what you think and what you enjoyed. Don't bother telling me if you didn't. I have plans in place to keep this going across the year. And the more engagement, subscribers and comments that the channel gets, the more viable and valuable it is for me and as a result for you. YouTube.com/CoffeePodsAndWads is where you can find all of that, as well as the live shows and interviews too. Today's guest is Matthew Bickle. Matt is a success story of turning your life towards health, and the story he has as a result is pretty epic and culminated last week in coaching Chandler Smith to his best game finish to date.
Yeah.
Are you a swearer? Do you curse? Do you swear?
I try not to, but I do use them. I wish okay. I didn't. I wish I had better words to use than the ones that I do, but I use cuss words a lot.
Yeah, I don't know. I remember someone said that to me before, that like it's a sign of a restricted vocabulary if you resort to swearing. And I was like, I mean, sometimes it's just funny.
Oh yeah, dude, it definitely hits. It's got its point. It's got its time and place. But I try not to be the guy that just like can't think of a better word than like saying it, you know, 100 times in a minute.
Yeah. I think for me, I think a lot of the time I swear is when I'm feeling passionate about something or angry about something or just vehement in general about something. Yeah. Or if I think, if I'm on a bit of a funny roll, I start slipping them in more and more because totally. I kind of getting boisterous or whatever. But yeah, I think a lot of my swearing comes from my dad. Like, my dad is a farmer. My God, he does have a restricted vocabulary though. But he I remember when I was a kid watching him just like a tirade at like what's essentially an inanimate object, like a cow who, like, you know, doesn't understand, like, the cow's not gonna be like, oh shit, you want me to go in there? Oh, I'm sorry. But yeah, he like, geez, the words, like, wow, great words. And terrible words. Where are you? You live in Colorado, is that right?
Yes, sir. I'm in Denver, Colorado. I'm outside of Denver. I'm at a lake in Morrison. I just training for an Ironman. So now that I got these CrossFitters out of here, I can get back to doing what I'm supposed to be doing.
That's cool. Okay. And what kind of, is it a full Ironman? Or
No,
triathlon.
half
Half. Okay.
Ironman. Yeah, it'll be my first 70.3. So I've never.
Wow.
The goal is to do a half this summer, full next summer. Leadville 100 the next summer, either on a bike or on foot, whatever I decide. And then I'm gonna try and get into the Barkley marathons in a long time. You might not even know what that is, but it's a
I
super.
do. I actually do know, because after a night out once, like years ago, someone was like, oh, have you seen this documentary? And I was like, we were both like drunk, and I was like, no. And we watched it like twice.
So
Once I
good.
enjoyed it, the second time I was like, man, like, come on, we've
Maybe
just
we don't
done
need to
this.
do that again.
It's great.
But
That's so, for anyone that doesn't know, that's like, it's isn't it like you run and then they change the direction or something in the middle of the night, and
so
they you enter by giving clothes or something, isn't it?
it's five marathons, five laps. If you finish it, three laps is considered a fun run, which is a joke. Because three laps is like 790 miles or something like that. So if you finish three, you've completed the fun run. If you finish five, you do the whole thing. I think like they do 40 people a year, and it's been going on for like 25 years, and I think like only 10 or 12 people have finished it. So it's definitely not something you go. Some people go to finish. I would not be going to finish. The only way I could even get in is they have a thrown to the wolves ticket they give out every year, which is someone that basically has no business being there whatsoever. And I think that with my backstory, I've lost a whole bunch of weight and kind of have a crazy story of my own that I think I could get in with that story and maybe just a good funny video. But it's like a hidden secret application, and it costs $1.28 to apply because he doesn't want anyone to be able to not financially be able to do it. And
Oh
it's like
yeah.
a series of puzzles, and a lot of it's mountaineering and mapping versus just the ability to overcome the terrain, which is going up Everest twice, is what it ends up being, in like 130 miles. Yeah, it's crazy.
That was an appropriate time to curse. That was okay. That
Yeah, yeah,
was
yeah. See,
a sponge.
good. Well played.
Isn't there something though? Is half the time is forwards, and then that you go backwards,
Yes.
then the other half
So
or something?
you do one loop, one direction, and then the next loop you have to do the opposite direction. And so you basically have to do each direction in the daytime and each direction in the nighttime is what he designs it to be done. And basically, long story, there was a guy that shot John F. Kennedy, who was an American president. Then this other guy shot the guy that shot him, and that guy went to jail in Tennessee. He was locked up in Tennessee, broke out of jail, ran. He was running for, I think it was like 50 hours or something, and they caught him, and he was only 10 miles from the prison. And this old boy who started the race is one of the first ever ultra marathon runners, and ran all these mountains out in Tennessee. And he's like, man, I could have at least gone 100 miles in 10 hours, and in like 40, I think it's 40 hours is what it is. And so he was like, ah, I'm gonna make a race up. And so the race actually goes under the prison where the guy escaped. And it's like, and the way the race works is there's no trail. There's only trail for about 10% of it, and the rest of it is all maps, and you have to know your way off trail how to get to 12 different books hidden in 12 different places, basically like in a clock circle of the loop. And you have to return to the place you started from your loop with a page from each book that matches your bib number. So it's like there's people that are fit enough to do it and just simply can't find their way around. There's people that can find their way around but can't run fast enough. It's a whole shit show. It's a good one.
I so I messaged you, like, I can't remember. I replied to you, put up a story like a long time ago, and I replied to it. I might be able to find it here actually, where I said something like you had done something, and I where is it? Hang on. You had done something, and I said, oh, that's crazy. Oh, your Whoop. I said, like, geez, you must set records on Whoop because you just never stop. Like, because you're every day you're doing something, and it's never like, oh, I'm just gonna go for a walk. It's like you'll do a class, then you'll do yoga, then you'll do sled drags, then you'll do, another workout or whatever. And then you said, I've got some big goals and I'm chasing them. Is this the stuff you're talking about then?
Yeah, totally. And I'm like not an endurance athlete. I'm 6'5", 295, right, as I stand here right now, which I don't know in kilos, that's like 120, 130 kilos or something like that. Like pretty big guy. And I'm trying to one, defy all the big guy stuff, but two, also not just stay a big guy. And so a lot of my goals just involve me losing muscle and gaining endurance, and it's kind of a give and take because I also love doing CrossFit and lifting weights so much with my friends that the FOMO gets me, and I love to train, but I these, you know, more hours I can spend on a lake and on a bike and running are really what are going to suit me for my goals.
That's fair. I'm on the wrong I'm on the wrong Wi-Fi network, so I'm just going to change and I might drop off, yeah. But I'll be back. Yeah.
Cool. I'll hang out here and just like show everybody around Colorado. It's beautiful. There's a lake over there behind us. Still with us. Frozen in time.
Am I back?
Unfrozen.
Ah, there we go. Okay. I got this laptop last week. And I can't, I'm so shit at using it. But when I got it, I was in America and I had no Wi-Fi, so I connected to the hotspot. But now that's my default, is like wherever I am, it just connects to my hotspot. And obviously that's not as good as like home Wi-Fi or whatever. But it's really irritating. There's Bruce. Hello, Bruce. And Draw Your Dagger. I met Bickle at an Invictus camp like 7 years ago. He's a good dude. He did the photography for Misfits at the games this year, I think.
Oh, cool.
Okay, so you do what did you weigh on your heaviest? What did you weigh?
475-480 pounds, which is 472 was the highest I ever saw on a scale, and that's like 210-20 kilos or something like that.
That seems like another appropriate time to swear. Geez, so like 20, okay, 28 stone is what my dad would call that. Did you, like, were you active before that and then like gained weight, or were you always heavy, or how did that happen?
Always heavy, always active. Like, always, like, basically grew up playing sports, but being a huge kid and didn't have football as an excuse because where I grew up, there was no American football team where I could play for. And played soccer, played baseball, was just huge and got it, you know, did the best I could, was probably terrible. And then got into high school, and my high school got a football team, and I was finally like found something that you can be good at and be big. And so became an offensive lineman, which is a pretty big guy position in American football. That kind of got me out of my hometown and got me into college at Baylor University in Texas. Played football down there, and then when I got done, that's when the slope got slippery. And I'll never forget, my strength coach told me, he was like, if you don't use it, you're gonna lose it, man. He's like, when you're a big guy, it goes fast. And I was like, sure, whatever. And I was just sick of training and lifting and running, and that was all kind of a negative, you know, thing in my head just from football. So I was like, I'm just going to relax and chill. And over the next 10 years, I gained like a pound a month for 10 years while like all my career dreams came true and all my personal things were happening well and life was good. And I was celebrating it, and I was gaining a pound a month for 10 years. And so I was like, played offensive tackle at 350. And my heaviest I ever saw on a scale was 472, which was, like your dad says, 28 stones.
No, hang on. Actually, it's fucking not. I did the wrong math there. 472 divided by 14. Yeah. Oh, 33. Jesus.
33 stones. That was a lot of stones.
Yeah, a lot of stone. I think stone, I don't know. I assumed stone was part of. So what do you go? Do you just say, you just count up in pounds indefinitely? Is there anything between all the pounds?
Tons. 2,000 pounds is a ton.
Yeah, we have tons as well, but we use kilos now, but we used to use like, you know, 14 pounds, and then 14 pounds is a stone, and then so you'd be like 1.5 stone would be like 21 pounds, or you know what I mean?
Yeah, we're straight pounds the whole time.
Yeah, that's weird. We obviously couldn't count high enough in Ireland, so we just added added a break every 14 to be easier. Okay, so what were your career? Well, what career did you have after college then?
So I actually started a business in the medical cannabis industry here in the States, which is a kind of an up and coming industry that it was big in Colorado where I live, and then it's become big in other states across the country. It's not nationally fully federally legal yet, but in many, many states, there's laws written for the use and production of medical cannabis. And I've always been fascinated with growing the plant. And so it's something I just kind of like instead of like looking at it and being like, oh, that was cool, I just became fascinated and started
Yeah.
traveling to Amsterdam and studying how the plant's grown and buying seeds and trying it myself. And then as soon as I was able to work in a medical market, which was Colorado, like back in 2003 when I graduated from college, I moved out here, immediately became a medical caregiver, started helping people, started seeing really sick people get unbelievably cured and helped from this plant that grows naturally from the earth instead of pharmaceutical pills. And kind of like that's a whole podcast worth of information of stuff that it just was, something that I'm very passionate about. And the thing that the trending thing you'll see with me is if I'm passionate about something, I go so far overboard that like I end up on this podcast because I'm coaching games athletes because I was just trying to lose weight, like.
If it was that, so was that a case of like you were in college smoking weed, enjoying weed and stuff, and then you were like, I need to find a way to, or like, or I need to research this more, and then you happen to find out that it's good for you or good for, that there's positives to taking it. Or was it a case of like you discovered the medicinal aspects of it and then started, you know what I mean? Like, were you like looking for a reason to keep doing it or just...
I was, but it was I so I'm like self anecdotally healed a lot of shit from myself, like ADHD and depression and confidence issues and heart issues, not heart like medical heart, but like heart opening and
Yeah.
being feeling love and giving love. And these were all things that I was happening with this plant that if I talked about it the same way I do now 10, 15 years ago, I'd sound like the biggest drug addict on earth. Like, I use this plant, it makes all my problems go away, and I'm so happy, and I sleep better, and my inflammation's down. People are like, you're not a drug addict. And now there's like tons of medical data behind it. And so it was the first of the two you said. I was smoking pot and just trying, not being a bum, but like I didn't like alcohol, I didn't like drugs. I was just like, this cannabis plant really speaks to me, and I love the way it tastes. And I became on this like quest to find out how it was made and how I could make it myself and how I could make it better, because the better you made it, the better it tasted, and also the better effect and feeling. And it's just like it was a big, huge thing that I got really excited about and haven't stopped being excited about my whole life. I still, my company now works in about 20 states around the country here and three or four countries around the world. And anywhere that legalizes, we move in and help people start businesses inside those places and get licensed and get staffed and do all the stuff that, and then also teach them how to grow the plant and move on to newer places that legalize. So that's what I do.
Are you like silly rich? It sounds like you're silly rich.
I'm not silly rich because I know people that are silly rich and they're silly rich. I am well off enough, and I also prioritize my freedom, which I think my Instagram probably makes me look richer than I am, because I am always playing, but I've prioritized my life around having the freedom to, be as free as I want and
Yeah.
trade as much money as possible for that. And so I could be silly rich if I wanted to, I think, but I've decided to like give away 90% of it and be overly fair, and which keeps me in the game longer in the cannabis industry where everyone else is trying to rip people off, and it keeps me with the best employees and the smartest people that work their asses off for me because they get paid a ton of money to do it. And it leaves me with a lot of time to train and still do my job because I don't want it to be over, but I just don't want to spend all day every day bragging about how much I work,
Yeah, that's fair, I think. So is it the actual physical plant that you like harvest and sell, or is it like drops, or do you know like what's the end product?
So it goes from a seed to a plant to a flower to a sellable flower, which you'd see in a baggie on the street. And then we also have licenses that can post-harvest extract it into drops, drinks, food, anything. So we work all the way across the board. Different states, the US is weird, and different states has different rules. So some states are edibles only, or some states are no, low THC or CBD only. And so we just work within the perimeters. It's kind of like having to learn a new language in every place you go, except for the languages are similar. So it's not too crazy, but also it's supposed to be regulated like alcohol, and it's not. It's regulated like, hardcore pharmaceutical, like, drugs that people can get addicted to and kill themselves on, which is not what cannabis is. So we're fighting against that, but I'm a glasses half full guy. I get to do this job that I love so much and then also have tons of time to train and do what I also love so much. So life's pretty good for me.
Do you ever like legislate or anything? Do you ever go to, you know, like any of those, like, what do you call them? Legislate's the wrong word. But do you ever like
lobby?
You know, yeah, lobby. That's the one. Do you ever do any of that kind of stuff?
So used to a long time ago, quite a bit more. We've created enough momentum in this country and also with my business that we're able to kind of like use our name and also use our success in all the prior places that we've been to get our foot in the door and then just show that we know what we're talking about and then, you know, kind of win them over from there.
What's the company name?
Bickle Consulting. Super simple.
Okay.
Banks are really weird around cannabis here. And so having a very subtle name is just an easier way to keep a bank. I've known people that have been kicked out of 100 banks, and I've never have, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah, that's interesting. No one listens to this anyway, so I don't think any bankers will battle
not
about
overly
it.
Concerned. Not overly concerned.
And so say if I or if someone was smoking weed and they're getting the whatever, we'll just say they're getting 100% of the benefits through that you're talking about through smoking weed. So it sounds like an awful lot of it is like mental, like anxiety based or like those kind of unusual or unwanted kind of mental tics that people get, I guess. So if weed itself, if the whole flower that you're talking about, you know, helps with that, say at 100% efficacy, what is the efficacy then of drops compared to the actual flower? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think the same. You don't have to consume it any one way. Our brains have cannabinoid receptors in them, these little antennas that are just waiting for cannabinoids, and it's called our endocannabinoid system. And these plants have those exact things. And whether you extract it out or, you know, different ways to ingest it, obviously some people have lung issues and don't want to inhale any sort of vapor or smoke. There's a lot of science behind understanding that even just like burning something with a lighter and smoking it like you're used to seeing with a cigarette is much different than using like a low temperature vaporizer. Something, you know, the small examples are like the e-cigs, the vape pens that you see people use, but those are trash because it's not a controlled heating element. It's just a battery operated, you know, piece of cheap equipment. But there's tons of different ways to deliver it to yourself, and the drops are no less effective than the whole plant. I do like the whole plant as far as THC and CBD, which can still be isolated into drops, into edibles, into any other way you want to ingest it. But the just CBD, it works good, but it doesn't have the psychoactive part of the plant in it.
THC is like the high, isn't that right?
Yeah. It's the part that's illegal here in the States and, or, you know, considered to be the controlled part of the cannabis plant. But again, it's a plant that grows, like it could grow right here. I'm sitting in a park and it could grow right in those bushes naturally as God intended it, you know, and in its truest form, plucked the flowers and used no different than mangoes and bananas and all these other things that we use. And it has this profound effect on us. And, you know, I think it's something that as we're finding out, it's really is real, a beautiful, helpful plant. And it just scares the shit out of, you know, the big, big, huge companies like the pharmaceutical companies and the alcohol companies, because this is going to put them out of business eventually, you know.
Mm. There's a guy, there's an Irish podcaster, Blind Boy, and he's a proponent of it and like talks about the benefits and stuff. Kind of very similar story to yours, like he had like a lot of mental health issues and stuff, and you know, a lot of just like depression and like anxiety and that kind of stuff. But like he went, I remember once he said that he went shopping once and he's standing in a grocery store and started thinking like, oh, what if I drop them? No, he was like, what if I see something I don't like and get sick? And then everybody laughs at me for getting sick. And then I'm always known as the guy who got sick. And it was like that kind of anxiety that just like literally makes no sense. Like, and when you hear it back, it's like illogical. But he like is in a great space now, and he attributes an awful lot of it to like, you know, CBT and then like THC and CBD and stuff used as well. But he was saying that like, if it was regulated properly and if it was allowed, you know, if it wasn't subversive or whatever or hidden, that like there'd be a lot less problems with it, and that would be a lot like safer to consume and stuff as well as a result. Like all of it would be. And then he was saying that it's almost like when you walk into a bar, you can say, oh, I want a beer, but I want one that's like you can walk into a bar and say, I want a beer that's going to get me fucked up. Or you can walk into a bar and say, I want a beer, but I want it to taste like whatever, or I want it to feel like whatever. And he was like, it's the same with weed. Like you could walk into a dispensary and say, oh, I want something that's not going to get me high at all. Or I want something that's going to get me high, but not going to make me see things. Or I want something that's going to get me high and make me see like whatever. And they'll be like, oh yeah, that's this one, and rifle through and pick it out.
100%. And the way we've reached that, and the more that we are able to get government approval on testing, the more we'll be able to dial that in even more. Because right now we're just like, this one kind of helps you stay awake, this one puts you to sleep. But what we can get to is like, you know, dial it in for blood pressure, for anxiety, for, and so we're getting there. I'm a glasses half full guy. I always will be. And so we could spend, you know, hours talking about what's wrong with the system, or hours talking about the fact that it's getting to happen in the first place and that we've made this much headway. And I'd say that if you look at 10 years ago, it was very, you know, a very taboo topic. It was very hidden. You know, it's now it's wide out in the open in a lot of places. And so I think that will trend eventually, but it's obviously going to take longer to get to certain parts of the world and faster to get to others, of it, you know?
Yeah, I remember when I was in Miami in January seeing a weed truck go past and I was like, what the fuck's happening?
Yeah, so crazy.
Just like, yeah, it's bizarre. So when you gained your weight then, you were that was all going really well, like the business was starting off and it was going really well and stuff, and you were gaining weight. Was that, like, were you living in excess? Like, were you eating shit, like, or was it just your lack of movement and stuff?
No, I was going hard. The same way that I go hard at training, and the same way I want to be the best at training, I wanted to be the best at eating. I had grown up really poor and never had money before and never had, like, a lot of success, and had married this beautiful woman and was able to travel around the world. And like, I thought that the way you were supposed to do it right was like, you know, eating these big, awesome meals. And I, you know, slowly developed an addiction to food over time, not even knowing I was doing it. But I think the addiction came from growing up poor and not having all the food I wanted all the time. And then getting to a point where it was like, okay, you know, here it is. I'm living the good life. I'm eating at these fine steakhouses. And I thought I was just killing it, not really paying attention to the fact that if you don't move your body and you eat like shit, this bad results are happening.
When you say addicted to food, was it like addicted to that type of food, or was it like whatever? You were just kind of trying to fill a hole, kind of?
Trying to fill a hole. Like you finish eating and start thinking about where your next meal is coming from, even though you're totally full and no need to worry about food. And just something constantly gets, you know, unhealthily on your mind, no different than alcohol or drugs or sex or whatever your addiction is. Mine just happened to be food.
And have you still got that? Like, do you still have to fight?
Yeah, it'll never go away. I mean, I don't, like, it's not something that, like, wins ever, but it's just like a devil on my shoulder that's like, you know, I haven't eaten at a fast food restaurant in probably 5 years, but I haven't driven past a fast food restaurant in 5 years and not wanted to eat at it. It's just like, it's not going to go away. And I know that about myself. And it's the thing about food addiction is it's the one thing you can't quit. You have to keep eating. And I could quit anything. I have a rock solid brain. The fact that it's something that I have to come back to every single day is what causes me to have to deal with it, you know. But it's something that I win most of the time, and if you can't win all the time, it's something that's your absolute demon, unless it's like, you know, killing people, then hopefully you win all the time. But it's something that I'm doing my best, and I give myself a lot of grace, and the more grace I have, the better I feel, and the easier it is to stay healthy.
Did you ever do like secret eating or anything? Did you ever do like, you know, like sneak off to eat and then be like, no, I didn't have anything, like hiding wrappers and stuff.
Just like eating on the way to someone's house to have dinner, you know, like being fearful that they don't have enough food. And and you know what's funny, I'll tell you, is I train and hang with some of the fittest people in the world now, and there's a percentage that think the exact same way as me. They just, you know, have a healthier approach to it. But like Sam Dancer is one of my best friends and training partner, and his wife Jenny, She's been to the games multiple times, won second twice on team, and she thinks about food all day, every day too. And when I found that out, and she has a nice six pack, you know, big rip muscles, and I was like, oh, there's a lot of people that deal with this. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, and it's not something I obsess about. Like, I'm not like, oh my gosh, I need to eat. But it's just something that's like always on my mind. You know, it's not something I'm just like laissez-faire about. Like Chandler could care less when he eats. He's, you know, he'll like forget to eat all day. And you're like, what are you doing? But he also is just built like different than most humans. So.
Yeah, that's fair. A fair assessment, I think. Yeah, it's funny, like because food is, I guess it's the same as any, like you say, any kind of addiction where if you've never been addicted to cigarettes, or if you've never been addicted to drink or whatever, you're not going to understand. Like, you have that thing of like, well, how could you, you know, just give up, like just stop doing it, you know, like, yeah. How could you, like, do you not realize it's bad for you, or do you not realize that you're upsetting people, or, you know, that kind of way. And it's like, it's a very difficult thing to empathize with. And I think food especially is a very difficult thing to empathize with, because like you say, there are people out there, like probably like 90% of the population would be similar to Chandler, not in physique or like mental fortitude, but just in like that kind of thing of like, but it's just food. You just eat your breakfast and then you just go about your day, and then you might forget to have lunch and you just have dinner or whatever. Whereas there's probably, and I'm just making up the numbers, but there's probably like 10% of people who are like battling every time they stand at a checkout till not to pick up something, or, you know, like not to just eat something on the drive home.
Yep, that's me 100%. And, yeah. And it's something that, you know, I was in Japan last year and in Tokyo, and everyone was so skinny, and no one eats protein. And I'm like, they probably don't even know, you know, they don't even know about macros. They don't even know how to build muscle. Like, it's so crazy that like whole cultures could care less. And then we live in this place of like, you know, in America, especially, it's just like food. And what's funny is when I started to like reel it in and figure it out and lose weight and overcome it. And, you know, you watch, turn on a TV. I don't watch TV. And probably one of the reasons why is every single commercial is for food. It's, you know, like, come eat the new bacon something or other, have the, you know, come to Applebee's and eat this thing and the cheeseburger. It's just like nonstop in your face in our culture. It's either sex or food. It's kind of like all that they throw at us here.
Nice. Yeah, it is. There's definite excess in the States, but I find it's creeping in everywhere. Like, it's similar here now.
Yeah, it's coming. You know, it's more of a humanity thing than it is a America thing. But we definitely have we got a hold of it early here for sure.
Yeah, but it is it's definitely something like I've struggled with, and I think I'm still kind of battling it now. But like, I'm in a similar place to where you were, where now I'm able to kind of be like, man, that'd be nice, but I don't want it. Whereas like before, I'd be like, man, that'd be nice. Fuck it, I'll get two. You know, like,
yeah.
But it is a really hard place to get to. And I think I'd say you were probably the same, where like, you know, a couple of hundred times during that period of excess where you were like, God, I should really like get in shape maybe, or, you know, and then you start and then just forget about it. Like,
yep. What's funny is I never started. I was the whole time I was like, I'm going to do it one day. I'll take care of it. And I know I'm an extreme person, and this is my voice in my head. And I was like, yeah, I'll just do it and go hard, but I'm going to like wait as long as I can. And a lot of it was denial too. Like, oh, I'm not that big. And like, they would start giving you the extra seatbelt on the airplane because the seatbelt didn't fit around you. I'm like, oh, they just make small airplanes now, you know, like writing all these excuses in my head. And then one day I was just like, I had an aha moment where it was actually just like, I was eating a terrible excessive meal and I couldn't think of anything that sounded good to me at all. I was just burnt out on the way I had been living. And so I was like, I'm going to try a whole different way of living. And I was like, this probably should be when I do that health and fitness and eat clean thing. And so I just dove in head first and was like, went crazy, lost like the first 125 pounds, which is probably like 60 kilos or something, or 50 kilos, did that like in, you know, 6 months, and then kind of plateaued and struggled. And then that's when I saw Rich Froning win the CrossFit Games in the last year, Carson on ESPN, and was just terrified watching the stuff they were doing. I was like, oh my gosh, this is crazy amount of working out. And I'm kind of always been leaning towards the crazy side of stuff. And I was like, that's what I'll do to get really fit. I'm just going to take a lot of hard work and it's going to suck for a long time. And so it took me like 6 months to get the balls to go into a CrossFit gym, and walked into one in like end of 2016, and just went head over heels, told the guy that owned the place and one of my friends, the coach, I was like, I'm going to do something great in CrossFit. I just don't know what it's going to be yet. And even if it's just lose 180 pounds, I thought maybe I could even do better than that. And so, you know, from the results we got this last week at the CrossFit Games, I think that that's a huge culmination of something I started a long time ago and have carried into this whole community and world of fitness, and gotten some crazy results for myself that also work for others, and got to see it work for Sam and Chan, which was pretty cool.
That's great. Yeah, I think going back to your airplane thing, my classic that I used to always go to is like, oh, fuck, this t-shirt shrunk in the wash. That was always this is just an old t-shirt. It's just like the not good quality or whatever. And then it was like, I remember about like 3 or 4 months ago, and actually two things happened. About 3 or 4 months ago, I remember like I put on a t-shirt and I was like, oh, this is kind of a bit tight. It must have shrunk. And then I put on another one, like a new one. And I was like, oh, this has also shrunk, even though I haven't washed it. And then I saw Barbell Spin shared a video of like Laura Horvath doing a lift in Berlin, and I was in the background and I was like, fuck, is that what I look like? And then that was the spark to be like, all right, okay, like I actually need to do it properly. So you live in Colorado, but you spend a huge amount of time in San Diego and like with Sam, and like, how did that happen? How did that link happen?
So with CrossFit, I have a funny CrossFit story as far as meeting competitive people, because I never really planned on it. I thought CrossFit was like a class you took at 4:30, you know, 5-6 days a week. And I started dropping into gyms on vacation, hadn't really looked much in past that and to the competitive side of it. And started going to a place in Kauai called CrossFit Poipu, and met the owner, Aaron Hoff, who is the founder and head of the Kiala Foundation that puts on the Ultimate Hawaiian
Trail. Oh, I've seen. Year.
And Aaron he's my size, and he's as wide as me, but he's a Hawaiian. He's born and raised in Hawaii. And he's somebody that I was just like, man, that's a big old guy my size that surfs and, you know, has a six pack and has all this. He's got it going on, and he serves God and he's helping kids. And I was just like, I want to be like this guy, and kind of got infatuated with going over there and that community and those people. And if you don't know, there's a whole lot of poverty in Hawaii. And Aaron is somebody who is like going straight to the worst places and finding the people that need the help the most, and reaching his hand out and helping feed them and helping people, you know, get roofs over their heads, and literally putting roofs on their homes. And he has the Kiala Foundation, which is an after-school program that teaches kids fitness and then feeds them and takes them home. So 5 days a week, they pick kids up in buses all over the island, take them to gyms, work them out, feed them dinner, and take them home. And I've watched it single-handedly change this entire island. You know, it was just the youth, and it's kind of the solution he's come up with that I think could work everywhere. But long story, I started volunteering out there a bunch, and then they had the trail run, and a bunch of games athletes came to the trail run, and met Greg Glassman, and they ended up making a video about my weight loss, and then got to go to the games because of that, and started meeting people. And at the trail run, I met Sam, and Sam and I had this, like, we have very kindred spirits, and I knew within like 20 seconds, I was like, man, this feels like this guy's going to be like my best friend for the rest of my life. And then he had the same feeling, and we were like, holy cow. And we started to just, the universe kept putting us in the same places. Ironically, the guy that said he met me at the Invictus camp, I think the Invictus camp was in Oregon, when Sam and I, like one of the first times after Hawaii, I saw him at the airport, like randomly in Oregon, and he was like, doing this Invictus camp, and I was out there working at a grow, and I was like, no way. And so I ended up going to the Invictus camp, and things like these synchronicities just kept lining up. And so he's like, hey, next year we're moving out for the season, Jenny and I, to go on team with Invictus, and we would love to, you know, if you want to come out and train and get super fit. And I was like, sweet, next step, like that's, you know, that sounds great to me. And so started training with Sam, and just basically just being a fly on the wall at Invictus with, you know, it was Garrett Fisher was there, Kristen Holter was there, Lauren Fisher, a whole bunch of other people that had really strong teams back then. So it was really cool just to be in that environment and to like be the absolute worst person at the gym every single day and just getting my ass handed to me, but also like training so hard and having so much fun. And we found like luckily and stumbled upon this little island right next to downtown San Diego called Coronado. And had it not been for Coronado, I don't know that these stories would continue, but we found this little island that's just amazing. And it's like super small. Half of it's a naval base. You has a beach that you can train on and a pull-up bar and a kind of a area for fitness. And we started getting places there, and every year that we've been able to, obviously with COVID, one year we didn't do it, and I think another year when they had their baby. But all the years besides that, we've gone out there in the end of the winter, beginning of the spring, and stayed through the whole season. And Sam, you know, I was on the team in 2017 or 18. I'm bad with years. When Invictus got second, and I was just like an alternate, but some of my scores counted from the open because I was super strong and
That's good.
Just was really cool. And I thought that was kind of the pinnacle of, I was like, wow, this is pretty cool. I made it pretty far just from a weight loss guy. And then Sam and I kept training together, and then it was just kind of like we started to interpret training our own way and take it, stop lifting weights, like, you know, Olympic lifting, and stop hurting ourselves and stop beating the crap out of ourselves, and started doing just like really fun stuff, and found out that our fitness was actually like nowhere near peaked, and that, you know, being healthy mentally and physically and spiritually creates a body that is so much more dangerous than the guy that can front squat the most weight. You know what I mean? And so we kind of just really readapted everything that we were doing, and I started training for wellness and longevity, not even for fitness at all or competition. And Sam started training with me, and we found that the more he leaned into what I was doing, the more the fitter and healthier his body was getting. And that when it was time to use it, still none of the weights went down. You know, he snatched 280 at the games, I think, and he could have snatched 300, but instead of snatching all year long, he had healthy shoulders and snatched twice all year and snatched 280. And we've just taken this approach to training that we don't wreck our central nervous systems. We train our hearts the hardest. You know, tons and tons of aerobic output. Chandler bought completely. Chandler actually was bought into it, and we were bought into it, and we kind of were like, oh, this is the same methodology. And so we go in head first, and you know, if you follow us, the three of us every day at Invictus were just in bloodbaths, but we were in bloodbaths on machines with high heart rate, you know, like no CNS, no heavy weight on our backs, on our shoulders, on our necks. And you know, those guys, obviously being competitors, have to still touch on the gymnastic stuff. And but we just did a ton of strongman and a ton of cardio, and just, you know, kind of threw those results up. And obviously Chan is a little bit more meticulous with the skills and stuff like that, which paid off with the handstand stuff. But this games was a little more straightforward than years past, I feel like, as far as gimmicks. And there was also a ton of strongman we saw in there, multiple sandbag events, rope sled pull. And so, you know, I think that we hit the nail on the head as far as their, you know, the way CrossFit's thinking and the way we're thinking is like, you know, we don't have to just kill ourselves with weights to find out who's the fittest. And it's also, you get a lot fitter if you're not hurt all the time, you know?
God, there's a lot to unpack there.
Sorry.
No, I like it. I like it. I just feel bad because every time you finish talking, I'm like, I need to go back to the second sentence he said in that. So you're like best mates with Sam. So were you like Sam's coach then this year as well? Would you have classified yourself as that? Okay, yeah. And Chandler.
Yeah, last year's. Yeah. And Chandler definitely, like, he doesn't. Chandler coaches himself.
Yeah.
But on the physical side, where I became Chan's coach, and it started right when we went out to Invictus, was just mental, you know, the mental and spiritual side of things. He's physically has got it pretty figured out. And mentally and spiritually, just getting out of the army and having to learn how to live like a civilian, and you know, like letting some guard down, and us understanding each other, me learning that the way he had to operate was like, if he didn't operate so uptight and so wound tight and so anal, that people die. And so that's a pretty big reason to have to be that way. But no one's dying now. And so, you know, my job is to remind him of that and to softly bring him down to earth here, where it's like, hey, this isn't life or death. This is supposed to be fun. This is supposed to be, you know, bring joy to your life. And it doesn't, then we're not doing the right thing, no matter if it pays your bills or not, no matter, you know, how much fun it is. And it's something that it had nothing to do with CrossFit really. It had way more to do with just like, I wanted Chan to feel joy and to feel the joy I feel every day. And so that's kind of where we leaned in. And it just so happened to be that, like, you know, he asked me about halfway through the season if I'd coach him at the games, and we definitely like turned it more into of a coach relationship as we moved forward. I think he just trusted me in that role and knew that I took a lot of pride in that role. And so if I told him stuff, he'd listen, which he's a pretty tough guy to get to listen. And so, you know, I definitely fought him tooth and nail, especially once we got out here to Colorado for training camp, because, you know, he took a big leap of faith even trying the high altitude stuff. The whole time you're here, you feel like shit. Your numbers all suffer. Everything looks like, you know, feels like crap. You have a hard time recovering and you're like, why am I doing this? But, you know, to get him to buy in, and a lot of that had to do with Sam's success last year. Sam got to the games last year and was fitter. He was fit, just as fit as he was this year. And he tore his bicep when he got to the games in the warm-up area, jumping up to a pull-up bar, just a freaky, stupid accident that can't explain, but God had it intended for some reason. And so, but then as soon as Sam got back to Invictus, he was like, I'd been telling Chandler, I'm like, where do you see this guy? And Chandler never trained with Sam before. And I was just like, I'm telling you, we got a freak on our hands here. And so we get back to Invictus and Sam starts whooping everybody's butts. And it's like, okay, Sam's like, something's working here. And these guys know what they're talking about. And so we would have never attracted him or gotten his attention had we not had so much success, even just in the gym in Invictus with the way Sam was training, the way I was training. And so he kind of like stayed more and more and more curious and gave me more and more trust. And that's what led us to go into the games. And I'm telling you, I talked to him earlier today, and it's just hitting me because we haven't even talked since the games. It was just kind of like, all right, see you. And I went home and he went off to start doing stuff. And we're like, you know, and then people were like, you know, he'd never made the cut before. And I was like, no way, no shit. Like, I had no idea. Like, we really,
he was in third for like, crazy. And like, not to downplay where he did finish, but like the fact that he was up there for so long was incredibly impressive.
He was dealing, man. And had, you know, we got those last couple workouts, like, you know, could they have gone better? Maybe. But I think honestly, like Chandler, the thing he taught me about himself as an athlete the whole week was like, I'm a fan still, even though I'm a coach, even though I'm still a good friend, I'm a fan. I'm like, man, when's he going to go out and just like blow the doors off one, like Matt Frazier, you know? And like, Chan had to like explain to me over and over, that's not who I am. And so the analogy became a baseball analogy that we just started swinging for singles, and everything was like damage control. And then it turned out to be a 15th place, and then another damage control 12th place. And then another, like, don't take a big swing, just pace it and overpace everybody, 'cause it's a young field and they're all going hard. And we get a sixth and it's like, holy cow. And he never out fitnessed himself. He didn't go to a blind place where he was like, oh my gosh, this was some act of God that he was able to win this workout. Like, he just kept chipping away and doing awesome. And by the end of the weekend, he just like found himself in uncharted waters. It was like, we went to bed on Saturday night and it was like, we're in third place and we got Brent Fikowski and Pat Vellner on his heels. And I just remember thinking to myself, boy, that'd be a weird place to go to bed tonight. Like, you know, it's a lot easier being the coach right now. Because, the pressure. And Sunday, and he'd never made a cut before and not even making the games last year and being sick. Like, it was so cool. And, like, I have goosebumps right now talking about it. I've never been more proud of a human being before in my entire life. Like, I was just floored. He maximized his performance. And I think, you know, people will look at it and go, man, he should have finished third. He could have finished out those last two workouts. Like, dude, he finished seventh fittest in the whole world. That is unbelievable, you know?
I think, people tend to kind of gloss over that as well, where they're like, well, he was in third, but, and it's like, yeah, but I mean, like, Vellner was in 27th at one point, you know, like, it's like, just because you were somewhere doesn't mean like that, you know, you're better or worse or whatever. Like, but no, it is nuts. I spoke to him on Sunday and I was like, my wife on Sunday morning, my wife like texted and was like, fucking hell, Chandler's in third. Like, I really hope he can do it. So I met him out the back and I had my camera and I was like, I said, I just got a text from my wife saying that, you know, you're in third and she hopes he can do it. So you know, if you could just do it, that would be great. And he was like, I want to do it as well. And he was like, and I don't want to let your wife down. He was like, if I don't do it, it's not because I don't respect your wife. It's just I can't do it. And yeah. I was like, yeah, that's fair. And then he was like, oh, one thing I learned about marriage is you always underpromise and overdeliver. So I'll try for top 10 and or top 20. And I was like, well, top 30, because the field was already cut to 20. And I was like, you'll definitely do top 30, like no question. But yeah, he was in good spirits, like, as well, I think, which is cool. But like, so, because I remember in October at Rogue, he did really well at Rogue. And I think some people were like, oh, is it just not a fluke, but like, is his performance a benefit of circumstance? The fact that like the type of programming that Rogue tends to see and the type of athlete that he is. And then people were kind of worried that that he couldn't replicate it at the games, basically. And I think a lot of people, I don't know, like I've kind of seen it even this week where a lot of athletes are putting up posts or stories or whatever saying like, oh, like I did my knee like the week before the games. I just didn't tell anyone, or I did whatever, like, you know, on the Tuesday of games week, but just didn't tell anyone. And I think Chandler was kind of similar to that last year, where at semifinals, there was kind of this confusion over like what happened and what, you know, like what's going on. Mm-hmm. And then when he did well at Rogue, coupled with that, I think people were like, is this just a flash in the pan? Like, is this just an abnormality, or is it a sign of things to come? Because when there's an athlete like him that is obviously talented and obviously strong and fit and everything else, is like ripped as fuck as well, like aesthetically just looks incredibly fit and strong, and is really, really popular. Like, it's really, really unlikely. If you had that whole Coliseum, I think it's very unlikely that you'd say to someone like, do you like Chandler? And they'd say no. Do you know, like, he's just incredibly likable. So I think when you have all those things coupled together, and then people want him to perform, and because they want him to perform, that means then that they expect him to perform. And then when he doesn't match their expectations, it's seen as a failure, or like, you know, like, oh, it's a bit of a letdown. And I'm sure he probably felt that too, like that kind of pressure. So do you think that how much of it do you attribute to what you guys were doing and the kind of like that mental, it basically sounds like mental performance coaching is what you were doing, like, or, you know, sports psychology kind of, how much of it do you attribute to that? And how much of it do you attribute to the physical aspects of what you're doing?
He was less fit this year than he was last year when he didn't make the games, because he broke his hand. We were riding bikes in March and he fell off the bike and broke his hand. And had to make it through quarterfinals with a broken hand, had to make it through semifinals with a broken hand, just healed right before the games. And it didn't allow him to do the stuff that he needed to feel to be physically as fit as he was. But mentally, he was the fittest he's ever been in his life, and he'll tell you that. And that's why he got some confidence in Rogue, and then we had a big, huge buildup of the cool thing that we had is also not just talking about me. I should include Sam into all of this. Everything I've said about what I've done with Chandler up until this point has also been with Sam right there next to us. And it was 2-on-1. You know, Sam's the exact same way as me. Sam is a loose and happy, and you know, you see it when Sam competes. He was talking, kissing, blowing his wife kisses in workouts and shit, and won the damn games. He was, which I told him, that shit's not going to fly next year if he's trying to go individual. But like, he's, you know, it's the having us.
I think he got a call. That's what happened there. God damn it. He might have to leave and come back now. If you want to entertain yourselves while you wait, you can go to Instagram to the video that Hiller shared.
Hey, sorry about that.
Oh, you're back.
Yeah, I'm so sorry. My phone's starting to blow up. I have a bunch of people trying to meet up with me. Can you see me right now?
No, I can't see you. But I can hear you. Now I can't hear you either.
Here.
Oh, back. Yeah, you're back.
Okay, I'm so sorry about that.
No, you're okay.
But basically, as I was saying, having the two of us, you know, made him really, really like, because he's a tough guy. He's a tough nut to crack. And having the two of us lean on him, it really started to weigh on him mentally, as far as like, wow, this could be this much fun, and this could, you know, and it might work. And the fact that he got the results that he did is he'll give a direct attribute to mentally the way he went into the competition, because like I said, physically he's been fitter. He was pretty, I mean, Chandler's pretty fit guy, but he's one of those, you know, deals where he was just limited in what he could do in training for a year and took that with a really healthy mind. And honestly, I think the handbrake was a gift. Because he didn't break the hand, he might just turn his head down and ignore what was going on in Sam and I's world. But being injured, he had to stop and pick his head up a little bit. And, you know, had him in a lot of yoga classes, had him in just a lot of discussions about God and spirit and, you know, all the things that that are really important to Sam and I and Chandler as well. And I think just like, again, having the success of Sam in the gym, even just in the gym, like day to day, Sam was bringing it to everybody in Invictus. And if you see the results of how fit everyone was in Invictus, to imagine that Sam was probably the fittest guy at the gym, you know, they're him and Chandler back and forth. Like, Chan started to really enjoy that and just feel good. And man, when you feel good, you play good. That's a direct result.
Were you always spiritual? Did you always believe in God, or did you find that?
Yeah, so it's been a kind of an up and down process. I was born and raised Catholic and had that force fed to me, and so I believed in God, but I believed him because I had to. And then as I became an adult, I became a very spiritual person, but drifted away from the idea of Christianity. And then through the Kiala Foundation and going to Hawaii and Aaron Hoff and the trail run, started to see a love that I didn't like was bigger than my love. And I have big love, as you use for your title. I saw even more love than I had, and I started to become very curious about it. And when I asked the question, it was, they said it was God, and I didn't believe him for a long time. And then had a moment where I asked God the question, and God filled my heart with a lot of that love that I was seeing and not, and wondering how I could be a part of. And so I still have that love in me, and it's something that I take and share everywhere I go.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was raised Catholic as well, and it is a funny one where I don't practice any kind of faith anyway, but I still do have those moments where I'm like, I don't know, is it because I was like, you know, psychologically conditioned to believe that like there's God, heaven, hell, sin, whatever else, that like now I'm still like say we have two kids, and I was like, well, fuck, we better get them baptized, like just in case. Just in case I'm wrong, we better get them baptized. And like, you know, I suppose in Ireland in schools, like there, you like in, it's in school, currently in school, where you make your communion and your confirmation, you do these sacraments and stuff. And I was like, well, like even just for that, I was like, we better get them baptized so they can opt out if they want to, but they don't have to opt out because they're not baptized or whatever. But then there was also a thing of like, imagine like whatever in 100 years when they die and they go to heaven and God's like, no, your dad never got you baptized, so you can't come in. And it's like, again, it's a totally illogical anxiety to have, but I'm like, fuck, just in case, like we better. Yeah, I think Catholicism especially is a funny one where there's that side of it, and there's also the, you know, the kind of like petition side of it, where it's only when the shit hits the fan that you're like, all right,
oh God, please help,
God, if you're there, you know, it's like plan Z. It's like, you know, God, make my hand stop hurting, or make my whatever, or like, you know, it's a funny one.
Well, faith is belief without evidence, and we as a whole culture of the world have a hard time believing things without evidence, believing something, especially when we learn more and more and more as we get older and as we become more evolved as a species that we know everything. And so I was lucky enough to get evidence, and it was a profound moment where I just asked God, are you real? And felt like my heart get filled up full of a feeling that I've never felt before. And I have quite a bit of strong feelings normally. So it was something profound enough to at least want to investigate. And the more I investigated it, the more joy I found. And and what's funny is, to your point, Sam once told me, he was like, you know, even if you're the times when you don't have faith, because you're not always going to have faith, he's like, why not? Why, you know, be wrong, shoot, err on the side of I was wrong, and I don't have to burn in hell the rest of my life because I chose God. Hey, it's not the worst place to be wrong, you know. I won't feel like, and if I die and I just die, I'm like, I'm such an idiot for believing in God, which is love at the center of everything and taking care of others. Like, it's kind of my moral code anyway, so it fits, in the shoe fits, so I'm wearing it, you know.
Yeah. Do you think, so when did you first meet Chandler then, about like 18 months ago? No, longer.
No, I've known Chan for, gosh, not that long, maybe like 5 years or so, four or 5 years. He got introduced through a friend and came, I have a gym at my house, and he came over and trained, and we were like, oh yeah, this guy, we're going to be good for each other. We both love to try and hurt ourselves, and even though we're different sizes, we always say there's no weight class in the jungle, and so we do a lot of hard working out together. Mostly cardio machines are kind of what we're known for, but he's one of the best little guys I've ever seen on a cardio machine. I'm a pretty good big guy, so we have a pretty good competition there.
And do you notice, or do you think if I asked, like, say, Jesse or his, I don't know, one of his brothers or Noah or someone, do you think, have you noticed a change in him? He's gone again. No, he's back. Have you noticed a change in him from 5 years ago to now, say, like, as in away from competition, away from training, just like a relaxation or whatever?
Yeah, everyone will say it. And what's cool is at the games, like, you know, multiple, like Dave Castro, Bosman, so many people came up and noticed it too. And you know, and enough people noticed it and asked him, and he was giving the credit, not all of the credit, but he was saying that a lot of it had to do with me and Sam and also Jesse. But you know, Jesse's just one person. I'm just one person. Sam's just one person. But you put the three of us together every single day, training in the same exact place, just like pulling flowers out of our butt all day long. And eventually he's either going to hate us and leave or get on board. And he's gotten on board. So, so cool to see. It's so cool. My only goal from this, and the only like thing I could take away from this that I'd be like, cool, I won, is I just want Chan to feel joy. I just want him to have as much fun as he's capable of having, because he's got an amazing life. He's got, you know, he's such an awesome human being. He's so kind. It's genuine. It's not just for the public. It's like all the time, nonstop. He's the guy that's too nice. He won't step out when it's his turn and he gets cut off. And, you know, like he's timidly kind and gentle and sweet, and also like the hardest dude we know. And so it's pretty cool to get to see that and just get to see him soften. But yeah, everyone, there's not a single person that hasn't said like what a big change we're making in him. And we know that, and he knows it. And that's why we're leaning into it and not just being like, you know, well, we tried and this guy's just a negative bum. And he wasn't a negative bum. He's a very, very structured, driven, hardened person who's getting softened up a little bit, you know?
So a lot of the stuff you mentioned, some of the stuff that you do a lot of like cardio stuff, but you do like what seems like almost daily, like sled drags as well. Is that like that kind of stuff, and the training that you do and the training that you get, like obviously it's, you know, we've seen Chandler still do like whatever squatting and lifting and gymnastics and stuff that he, as you say, he needs to kind of keep brushed up on, like, so that they're not like abnormal movements when they come up or whatever. But like that kind of training that you get him to do, and you and Sam, is that like based on what you like doing, what you've like stumbled across as you've been training yourself? Or is it like, have you educated yourself in that side of things? Or like, where do those kind of workouts and that kind of mode of training that you do, where does that come from?
Yeah, so I'm a big fan of West Side Barbell, Louis Simmons, which is the conjugate method. And then also Strongman. So I don't even know his last name, but Julian something. He's a French fella that was taught all the strongman at Invictus, so all the coaches there have been trained by him. And then I think his program is called Strong Fit, so it's kind of like a mix between CrossFit and strongman. But basically, like strongman, and when you think of strongman, most people think of like World's Strongest Man, like Brian Shaw picking a car up or something. Strongman is strong base core, you know, trunk, like being strong so you don't get hurt is what I started training for. And so a ton of our training is just building this unbreakable body, which, you know, Olympic lifting will break you unless you're like only train Olympic lifting and only train for Olympic lifting. And powerlifting will break you no matter who you are and how strong you are. Eventually there's a ticking time bomb and your body will break. And I've gone down all those roads and failed. I've torn all my labrums and my shoulders. I was left with nothing else to do, really. And so I was like, well, I might as well do all these things that they say are like rehab and still fitness. And found out that is like, if you can build that, you can build a huge aerobic cardiovascular base and do it without beating up your body, which is a big, huge piece of the sled pull, is that, you know, you get the resistance of walking up a mountain, but it's completely flat. There's no impact on your body. There's no downhill. It's like uphill step every single step of the way until you get back into your car. And because there's so much resistance pulling on your body, there's no strike impact on the ground, and so you can just build a ton of volume at a really high heart rate, but still just all you're doing is walking a 15-minute mile around a lake, you know? And so I found just some things that are like intangibles that if you hit them 4 or 5 times a week, you're not going to be missing out, and you can still jump in and do the other things, mine being cycling and swimming, and Chandler's being CrossFit and gymnastics. And so, but if you sit into that the core central basis of a ton of strongman and then the conjugate stuff, which is constantly varied within each movement of lifting. And so instead of just squatting all the time, we do, you know, safety bars, split squats, and then we'll do chain squats, and then we'll do banded squats. And so we try and constantly vary the way we're doing things, but never, like, always increase the intensity, always keep the load light. And we're strong enough guys, especially me, Sam, and Chan. Like, maybe if you're a 150-pound CrossFitter, you know, this doesn't work for you at all. But for guys like us who know that the numbers are there decently enough, that as long as we're really, really strong and healthy, that's going to create bigger, you know, leaps for us than it is if we're just going to beat ourselves against a barbell all the time.
So do you think if you hadn't, and if Chandler hadn't, and if Sam hadn't, if you guys were like 20, no, because you were already playing football then, shit. If you were like 16 and you started doing this, you wouldn't have the same, you three wouldn't have the same successes that you have now, as in, like, you need that foundational base of like, oh, I'm already really strong. I can,
yeah.
Like you say, Sam could already snatch 290, 300, whatever, like before he got injured. And so he knows it's in the locker, basically. He just needs to keep the movements right. And, you know, the strength base is there.
I would like to think that the Sam Chan and I meeting at 16 would have been, had we not burned it up and like screwed it up, like, it'd be very potent, because we're all three people that love to push things. And
yeah.
We constantly call it a pissing contest. Like, we all, as soon as the three of us step up to work out next to each other, we're like, oh shit, now my lungs are gonna bleed. Like, now this just became a pissing contest, you know what I mean? Yeah. It's always like, oh, I'm gonna go 90%, like, oh yeah, me too. And then,
yeah,
you know, it just at each other's throats, and that's something that's special. But I don't know that we had that in us at 16. I didn't, you know, I still had to become a man and learn how to be, how to want to suffer. And so, but yeah, I, you know, who knows? I know that where we all are right now in our lives, it's so cool. It's just, it's such a, you know, I'm 43 years old and 300 pounds and throwing down with these guys that are like some of the fittest people on earth. And I've earned their respect, and I know that. And that to me is like the coolest like accolade I could ever get in my life. And the proof to the outside world is that I get to coach them and I get to, you know, be some sort of a leader to them. But the truth of the fact is that just like being in their presence every day makes me such a good man and better person and better Christian and better human being, that I'm just in awe of the fact that I'm so lucky.
Hmm. There's Jocelyn Strong. Is it Jocelyn? Bickle, miss you, man. Amazing working with you, Chandler and Sam did. No, amazing work. Fucking hell, I can't read. Amazing work you, Chandler and Sam did this year. Jesus Christ. And Jonathan Ortega as well. Bickle, you're amazing. And I swore you were 33. Why? What age are you?
43.
Fuck. Okay. Jeez, you don't look 43. And so when you're doing your sled rides, this is something I'm always curious about, because you guys do this, you do it around the block at like Invictus or whatever over there somewhere, and you also do it, you did it in park or whatever yesterday. What's the reaction like? Like, what's the reaction of like onlookers? Because obviously it's probably something that you hear before you see, so you just hear this like metal dragging on concrete.
It's honestly, I live in a very active place. Downtown San Diego is a little different. There's a huge homeless population in downtown San Diego. But even them, like, I'd say 75% of them were thumbs up, you know, way to go, you're a badass. Like, and you get a lot of that. Here in Colorado, you get a ton of it, because I pull it instead of downtown Denver. I just pull it around a lake that's by my house. It's a big 2.6 mile loop, and so it's plenty of distance, and everyone there is working out-ish, walking, biking, and so they're at least tolerant of you there. And then I'd say 25% of the people, and I wear headphones, so I don't hear a lot, but like the other day my headphones were dead, and I'd say 5 people were like, you're badass, that's so cool, yeah, killing it. You know, people are just fans of it. It's It's hard enough to go walk around the thing, and people know that. You know, to get the motivation to go walk 3 miles is not easy. Putting 100 pounds behind you is, gosh, it's a nightmare. But that's what I love about it. It's just slow and simple pain. You know, nothing technical about it. Just how crazy can you be?
I remember about like 3 or 4 months ago, I follow self-made Taylor Self's programming. And I remember messaging him being like, thank you for programming. Like I sarcastically said it. Thank you for programming the dumbbell carry. So it was like, you had to do like a farmer carry for, I can't remember what it was. Basically like farmer carry for 200 meters. Then you had to do one up, one down, like one overhead, one by your side for 200 meters. And then two overhead for 200 meters in different, you know, at different intervals of the workout or whatever. And there was like, at one point, I live in a housing estate. So there's like, you know, loads of different houses around or whatever. And about halfway through, I realized that. So I saw these two like teenage girls, you know, like 15, 16 or whatever in the distance. And I saw them look at me and I was like, oh, fuck. And I was kind of like, I was just carrying them by my sides at this point. And then later on, they were like up. They obviously didn't know where I was walking back to, but like, they stood between me and my house, basically, and
you had to walk right at them.
And videoed me like walking, carrying one up, one down, and I was like, "Fuck's sake!" But yeah, like so, like what I think of when I see you guys dragging your sleds, I think of like, God, if I got that much attention from two people just for carrying a dumbbell, what kind of attention would I get from dragging a sled?
Well, dude, downtown San Diego was me, Sam, Chandler, this guy Bryce, like. Every other, they're all chiseled out of stone. Like, we're shirtless, tan, just marching through the streets four deep, you know. It was so much fun. I love it. I love the spectacle. Like, if you want to come, you know, people can look. People can take videos. We don't care. Like, it's. I'm not doing it for the attention, but I certainly don't mind it because it's. If I saw it, I'd be like, I need to get my lazy ass pulling a thread. You know what I mean? That's what I think, at least. And yeah. Hey, I don't want to be rude here, but my car key is my, I drive a Tesla and my car key is my phone and phone's about to die. And if I don't have any phone, I don't have a way to get home.
That's
and
okay.
So, I think I need to cut this off pretty soon.
That's okay. We'll finish up. I just wanted to ask one of the things that I saw. So obviously you're like mental performance coach and stuff with Chandler and helping him that way. And like a coach's job at the games is generally to be a punching bag after a bad workout or a back slapper after a good one, or, you know, pick people up and that kind of stuff, and a bag carrier, a Sherpa kind of. When you in the Coliseum during the snatch and clean, the Olympic total, I remember looking over and Chana was like looking up at you and you were saying like, oh, like 130, or, you know, like you were shouting down numbers and stuff to him. Yeah. When it's that side of things, when it's like, when that's your role, is that, do you feel like more pressure? Like, because obviously if you like miscalculate or if you like see horrifying. The wrong number,
Yeah, it was horrifying. It was the only time of the whole weekend I felt pressure. I was like, oh shit, I'm part of this workout now. and it's funny, there's a story behind it. We were just trying to stay ahead of the guys right behind him. And so we were doing numbers and he's like, you stay ahead of Pat, keep me ahead of Pat. And this is all communicated from the floor. We didn't even talk about it beforehand. So that was a poor job on our part. And then we got to the time and I'm sitting there and I'm like, if I screw this up, I am going to hate myself so bad. And so we got it done and we should have done 2 more pounds and we'd have finished 2 places higher and it was an 8-point difference. I kept him ahead of Pat, which is what he wanted, but I also should have been cognizant of it. It was just a big moment for me.
Yeah.
There's a hindsight for me. And I don't know if you know Max, I'm bad at his last name, Think Tank Training.
Oh yeah, Alhaj, yeah.
Noah's coach. And yeah. I think, so in my hindsight, I wish I'd have brought Max out to sit with me for the snatch in this clean because there was a lot of numbers happening fast. And basically like if he'd have snatched 2 more pounds and he got 8 more points, which turned out not to be an issue. But it's just a learning moment that like, okay, next time we do this, I'll have a bigger gun. Cause I'm not a CrossFit coach. You know, I don't, I'm just a friend who can help out. And also, with the mental stuff, I feel like I can be pretty effective, but crunching numbers, I was like, oh God, but we did good enough. And the thing is, I should have told him like 20 more pounds cause he would have lifted anything he pulled off the ground.
Yeah.
He was just, again, we were just being conservative and not trying to go for big swings, you know?
Yeah, that's fair. Well, look, I better let you go before your phone dies. I don't want you to have to drag your car back to your house after
I mean, you know, I wouldn't mind.
Yeah. But listen, thanks. It's been great getting to talk to you. You're a fantastic guy. Congrats with all your successes with yourself and with Sam and Chandler helping them as well. Best of luck with all your prep for your triathlons, your Ironman, your halves, everything. And hopefully you get into the marathon as well. It's been great. And I look forward to staying in touch. You're a cool guy.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much. And blessings to you. I really appreciate you being so kind and allowing me to share my story.